We start with the raw powder, which is this powder of nanodiamonds that we get, and there are several suppliers, mainly from Russia and China. Then we do several chemical cleanings, which I call sort of bucket chemistry. You put these diamonds in a different solution, mainly acids, because the stable form of carbon at room temperature is graphite. So the surface of these diamonds tend to be graphitized. So if you look at this powder, it looks almost blackish or grayish, a bit like old school pencil. So we have to clean that to make this nice and clean on the surface. When I say clean, I also mean that we can functionalize this surface. We can attach antibodies, proteins, so that our diamonds are now reactive with whatever drug or tissue we want it to attach to. And then it gets, for example, in an animal model, in a mouse, it would be injected under the skin, intramuscular, it would get injected through a vein, the tail vein that the mouse have. And then the drug goes and does whatever it needs to do. And because it is attached to the diamond, we know where it is going. So it's the normal bodily process that basically brings the diamond where it has to go.
And how do you see it? Is it like a bright light shined on the animal? Or?
So the imaging is all optical. We basically shine laser light in a standard epifluorescent microscope. Let's say if you're talking about a mouse, the mouse gets anesthetized. It gets put into this microscope machine that scans the mouse, and the signal that's coming out is completely optical. So we detect it again optically with just a photodetector, and we can see where the diamonds are gone, if they're localized in the liver, in the muscle where they're supposed to be going, or wherever they go. This is one approach. One of the limitations of this approach is how deep you can go within the skin, which is at the moment limited to just a few millimeters, simply because light doesn't penetrate as much. But there are other techniques. One that we are investigating is photoacoustic, in which we basically use other physical methods to get the signal out of this diamond, and that one goes a little bit deeper in the animal, but is not as immediate because it needs a little bit of post-processing to extract the actual information.
These aren't the only types of tracers in the medical industry. What makes using diamonds better?
So in the medical industry, the two main ways of doing this type of studies is biopsies, where you basically cut open the animal. But the problem with those is that they're not really reliable because you have to do a lot of tests, and then you have to decide which part of the animal to look at to say, okay, the drug has gone where it should or where it shouldn't. The second approach, which is better, is doing live imaging, which is what we're focusing on. And right now, live imaging, for the most part, is made with the radioactive probes that get injected into the animal. And of course, these have a couple of drawbacks. First of all, they are toxic. But second of all, their signal doesn't last very long. So you can't really follow the drug, what the drug is doing in the body, for more than a few hours. Nanodiamonds sort of overcome that problem because, first of all, they are non-toxic. But most importantly, they are very bright and they last forever, like diamond. So for as long as the drug is in the body, the diamond that is attached to it is able to follow the drug for days, weeks, or even months until the drug gets expelled by the body and the diamond with it.
It does sound like an expensive procedure. How does it compare to the radioactive imaging?
So it's actually relatively quite cheap for several reasons. First of all, the material is very easy to produce. We tend to use what is called detonation nanodiamonds, where you have trinitrotoluene, which is the TNT that you see in Willy Coyote cartoon. You basically get the reaction, that explosion going in a very small chamber. And for a very, very short amount of time, you have the right conditions of temperature and pressure for the carbon naturally existing in the explosive to form diamonds that are quite small, 5 to 7 nanometers, which is basically 10,000 times smaller than the width of one of your hair. So the process, as you can imagine, is not very expensive. So you can, on top of my head, 1 gram of these diamonds is about $50, which is quite cheap considering that we use way, way lower concentration than that. But I think the most important thing in terms of price is that these diamonds, you can keep them on the shelf. You don't need to refrigerate them. And if you think about radioactive isotopes, there is a lot of cost in terms of handling, delivery, getting into the country that, of course, increase the price of the product, which instead we don't have. So diamonds in that sense are better.
And what kind of applications does this have then?
So we're thinking at the moment to use it in the very early stages of drug development, as I say, to help, for example, an animal model to follow what the drug is doing to make sure that it's safe and the drug is effective. And right now we are focusing into the stem cell industry, one of the fastest growing industry in the medical sector. The idea would be to use these diamonds as tracers into the stem cells to when they spread and they develop, we can track them around and see, oh, okay, so we want to grow this particular tissue and it has grown as expected, or actually part of these stem cells have gone somewhere else in the body and they start growing a tumor.
How far along are you with using these on humans? You've talked about animals a lot. What's the next step?
We're still focusing on try to maintain this into the preclinical trial, so just the animal models, because, of course, as you go down the line, you have to have more safety approvals. And right now, as I was saying earlier, we're working with stem cells. One project that I'm particularly excited about is trying to growing the crystalline, which is the lens in your eyes, because some kids are born with a congenital condition and their crystalline, their lens, is opaque. And so it's trying to grow one with stem cell from people that have a normal crystalline and hopefully be able then to implant into these patients. And what he wants to make sure is that these cells are growing, these stems are growing into the actual lens, so they specify as the proper cells, and wants to make sure that these cells don't go rogue somewhere else. So that's how far we are in the development of the technology, testing and validating it.